You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by Netmums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are.
All right, sweaty, snotty, teary lot, how are we all today? In case any of you didn't know, I have been in bed for 100 years with COVID. My children now have COVID. We have been isolating for 3 weeks and it continues. So I'm sure you're all doing better than I am. To be honest, we're all sweat, snot and tear free now, which is good. But Wendy, I hear you have the snot now.
I have the snot, but I have a negative lateral flow test and my kids have negative tests. But apologies in advance for any sneezing. But according to you, lateral flows aren't even being believed by Oxford Council anymore. So who knows?
Yeah, it looks like everyone's being sent for PCRs instead of relying on their lateral flows. But yeah, I really hope you guys don't have it. One of them had a negative PCR, right?
Yeah, they've both had negative PCRs.
Oh, well, there you go. You'll be fine.
Negative. It's fine. I'm just snotty. Other illnesses are available. That's the thing that we all keep getting.
It's very true. Well, without further ado, shall we introduce this week's guest who's going to talk about much more interesting things than sneezing and snot? Actually, at the other end of the scale, she's going to talk about delicious food mainly, I hope, because that's what I normally talk to her about.
We can't put food and snot in the same sentence. It's just
Ladies and gents, please welcome actress turned everyone's favourite celebrity cook, Lisa Faulkner. How are
you? Well, I'm snotty, but from hay fever. So I joined the club.
Yes, we did a corn cook-along video with you, didn't we, about a week ago, and you were sneezing then with your hay fever.
Oh, my God. It was pretty dreadful then, and it hasn't let up. The hay fever has been really bad this year. But I'm having COVID tests, which you say don't mean a thing, but we're them at our
don't
house twice a week.
Well, you've kind of answered this already, but we always ask our guests the first question, any sweat, snot or tears in your house this morning?
So there you go. There's snot from hay fever.
Do you all have it or is it just you?
It's just me. My daughter gets it a bit. John sometimes gets it, but I'm the one that's had it so badly this year.
It's weird that it has years where it's worse, isn't it? I find it really hard to keep track of. So then the next question we always ask is, how was your lockdown? Because obviously this last year has been a strange one and it has tested families up and down the country and continues to do so. How was it for you?
Do you know what? Once I sort of got my head around it, it was okay. I sort of am looking back on it now with rose-tinted glasses and going, oh, but we had time to do things and we are actually all together and now that's really disappearing fast. it was such a surreal time that I'm almost looking back on it going, did that really happen? And we decided to work, John and I, try and work through it by doing little cooking videos and things. So we didn't spend a lot of time doing nothing. We were really cooking all the way through. And yes, it was hard. It was hard with the kids. I think the kids found it even harder than us, really.
How old are your kids, Lisa?
Mine's 14, nearly 15, and John's is 15 and 17.
Because I think teens, they had it the hardest. You know, my four-year-old was pretty bloody oblivious.
The teenage thing, for them not to go out, and actually when they were allowed to walk out with their friends and go around the park, I mean, I just let her go even when it was sort of dark outside, as in, you know, when it was 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock and it was winter. I just said, if you want to go, just as long as you tell me exactly where you are. And she'd be saying, yeah, I'm here now, or I've arrived here, and I track her on my phone anyway. But I just thought it was easier to just let her get out, even if she was walking for 2 hours with her mates. It was just at least she was out.
They need friend time, don't they? They really need their friends in a way that we've kind of forgotten about, I think.
Yeah.
As do we. It's true.
How did you cope not seeing your friends?
By FaceTiming them constantly, which annoyed my husband no end.
Did you not get sick of it? I was like, I did a couple of weeks of Zoomtastic, must speak to everyone, and then I was like, I'm so over this. Don't want to Zoom anyone ever again.
No, believe me, it was only my sister and my two best friends. Aww. It wasn't, and we didn't do. Me and my besties would do a WhatsApp FaceTime, and me and my sister would do like have a coffee on the FaceTime. But no, I'd given up the cocktail Zooms pretty early on. It was no fun.
Yeah, it's really hard to try and replicate a night at the pub on a computer screen, isn't it? It just doesn't really work.
And you just buy, you know, this first time everyone dressed up and I was like, that's great. And then the second time I was like, I just want to stay in my pajamas. And I don't really want to see anyone. And you could tell that everyone had got into a bit of a downer. So it was good that we sort of kept in touch, but I'm so pleased we're out of it, pretty much out of it.
Yeah, nearly out of it.
Fingers crossed.
So what I want to know is, was the kitchen yours or his during lockdown? Because in a house with two mega cooks, did you fight?
It sounds like it was just a bit of a cook-a-thon.
It was, and it was both of ours, and we cooked together. Aww. And it was actually really nice because it kept us sane, going, what are we going to do tomorrow or what are we going to cook? You know, and as things opened up, it became easier because otherwise we were using stuff that we had in the freezer. But, yeah, it was all right. It was, we sort of cooked together anyway, so that wasn't the problem. I think more the problem was understanding that we were both at home. You know, I cook from home and work from home quite a lot, whereas John is usually in the studio. So it was just trying to find the time where he'd be like, well, you're on FaceTime again. Oh my God, you're so loud on the phone. And I was like, yeah, well, usually you're not here.
Yes, the joys of being stuck inside with your other half.
Exactly.
You realise you are not supposed to spend. And I realise, Annie, this is probably quite poignant as you are in week three of isolation with all of your nearest and dearest. But nobody's meant to spend that much time together.
No.
Nobody.
No, I don't think so.
No, it's not healthy for anyone. Definitely isn't healthy for me, I'm telling you that much.
Patience.
Oh, I have none. When it comes to the kids, Lisa, what's the parenting thing that you and John disagree over the most?
We don't parent each other's children.
Oh, so, that's a nice, clean dividing line.
Yeah,
I like a clean line.
It is. And it doesn't, it's not, doesn't always work, but I choose to be his kid's friend, in inverted commas. Obviously, I look after them and we all look after each other's kids and, you know, my daughter lives with us. But we try very hard because I think we parent very differently and my daughter has different issues to his children, so we sort of parent separately in a way and back each other up.
And was that a decision that came out of the disaster of trying to parent each other's kids, as in did you try and think, oh shit, this is a bad idea, or did
I think we've all got, John's kids have their mum and my daughter has her dad, so we've got parents, you know what I mean? And so actually that gives me the chance to be the one that concedes and goes, yeah, of course, go on, you know, you can watch telly for another hour, have your phone for an extra hour. I would rather have that relationship because life is stressful enough. And there are times where you have to parent each other's kids and there are times where you have to discipline. And sometimes it's brilliant and sometimes it's really tough.
But so are normal families, or normal, whatever the hell normal is.
No.
So is it, what I mean is, so is a non-blended family. Like there are days where it's like the Waltons and days where it's like, I don't know, Nightmare on Elm Street. Do you know what I mean? Like that just is life.
I totally agree. But I do think that sometimes it's just easy. Sometimes it's, I think when there's different family dynamics and there are different things that kids need from you and, you know, there's just a lot of politics, emotional politics that you have to wade through. So I try and keep out of it as much as possible. And so does John with me.
I think that's very sane and very, very sensible. I think as well that one of the things you don't realise till you're kind of in it is that every kid needs a different type of parent. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you can only, even if you had 10 kids all with the same parents, they would all need a slightly different parenting style because they all are so unique and have such unique relationships with you, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, my daughter, we've got our own, we are our little pair and, you know, I do parent her differently. So, and I think that can be hard for John. You know, it's not easy.
So here's the question. Do you, as a couple, struggle with how the other one parents? Do you sit there going,
do you just think, I'm going to bite my tongue, I'm going to bite my tongue?
Yeah, how do you cope with looking at the way he's doing it, thinking, oh, I wouldn't do it like that?
The thing is that I think what we do is we're very patient with each other, and I bite my tongue and he bites his tongue quite a lot.
The other thing, though, is, are you pleasantly surprised sometimes? And do you think, God, I wouldn't have done it that way, but wow, that's amazing. That's had an amazing outcome.
I think that sometimes, I think you will learn from, I'm always learning how to parent my daughter, how to navigate.
Be a human.
Yeah. So I think that as long as you're open to it, there are so many things I learn from him, so many things he learns from me, but compromise and being kind and taking a breath and maybe going upstairs and having 10 minutes out before I say stuff, it works better. I realise that, you know, that counting to 10 doesn't work for me, but going upstairs and running a bath.
I remove myself from the room because otherwise my mouth will just go.
Yeah, and I think sometimes you just go and have a bath and work out what's actually important and what's not important, and then go.
It's surprising what you don't care about half an hour later, isn't it?
Exactly.
I surprise myself all the time.
Yeah.
You're both much better humans than me.
Now, I would like to know, please, we would like, please, a short summary of your becoming a mum story. Because we know you've written a book about it, it's meant to be, but for anyone who hasn't read it, can you give us the kind of, in a nutshell version? And I know it was complicated and complex.
It was like complicated.
Like it is for so many of our NetMums users.
Yeah, I mean, to put it in a nutshell, tried to have babies, started off thinking it was fun to try, and got pregnant and then had an ectopic.
Which is horrible.
Which was horrific, and I just didn't understand because it was called an ectopic pregnancy. I didn't realise that it meant that it wasn't a viable pregnancy and it was going to burst, which it did, in the wrong tube or whatever.
Oh, God.
So basically I was left with a big operation and one tube. And it was pretty awful. And then we went through IVF and we had 3.5 goes of IVF and all failed. And it was again, really emotionally hard. And then we decided, okay, let's look at other ways to parenthood. And we looked through everything and decided that adoption was for us. This is me and my ex-husband, Billy's dad. And we then decided to adopt, and we looked through the whole adoption, how that works. And we ended up adopting through the UK. And yeah, it was a really hard journey. We did a sort of concurrent planning fostering to adopt, but we've got our little girl, and 14 years later we have our amazing daughter. We both parent together still,
great,
and we are very good friends, and we made that decision from the start.
That must be hard, though. Is it hard?
Actually, it's not. It's much easier as we've got older. It's much easier, you know. We've not been together for a long time now, but we always said from the very beginning, Bills is our priority. We are going to stay friends for this and friends for Billy. And it's not hard, actually, because I just always have her in mind. Mm. And I think having an adopted child and knowing the trauma that comes with them, and it's hard that you parent, as I was saying earlier, it's sort of like homework. You do your homework as an adoptive parent. And yes, there is all the everyday teenage parenting or baby parenting all the way through, but there is an extra on top. There is a parenting plus that goes with it. And so, you know, we do a lot of reading, a lot of homework, a lot of workshops, a lot of talking, a lot of therapy. But that means that me and Billy's dad have a great relationship and are both always there for her. So yeah, that's how we became parents, really. But
how long a journey was it from let's have a baby to Billy's here?
Oh God. Yeah, it was a good 3 years, 3.5 years, maybe
a
bit longer.
It's a long time.
Yeah.
How old was she when you finally adopted her?
She was 2.
So how was it that first day? Because obviously
the first day is a really good bit of your book, actually. You know, the first day where you actually have her, like you're not adopted yet, but I love that.
Yeah.
Can you tell the listeners? Because that for me was that bit where, unlike being pregnant and having a baby, you kind of one day you've just got a baby.
It was
totally mind-blowing.
It was mind-blowing. It was incredible to wake up with a child in the house, with the, you know, I mean, literally we were going in and out of the room every 5 minutes. You know, you're so worried that they're not going to sleep or that what's going to happen to them. And I'm very lucky. My sister is my absolute amazing best mate and has had three children. And I have been birth partner to three of them and looked after the two youngest. I mean, I've looked after all of them, but the two youngest, two oldest girls were my joy throughout. So basically I'd looked after them and had them in the house. So it wasn't completely alien to me. I changed nappies. I'd watched Teletubbies. I'd done everything. Do you know what I mean? Literally everything with them. So getting Billy wasn't too much of a shock, apart from the fact that I didn't know what she liked or what she didn't like. I didn't know the signs.
Well, it's a getting to know you process, isn't it? And in a way, that's very similar to having a newborn. Like, you don't know what kind of newborn you're going to get. You don't know what the different cries mean or what.
No, exactly. Yeah. And so it is very, very similar, apart from that you have a lot of red tape. You have a lot of social workers. You have people checking up on you constantly.
Was that horrible, the checking up?
No, because...
Or did it feel supportive?
I don't know if it's really supportive. I think it's that you feel that there's a lot of pressure, that you're trying to make sure that the house is clean and the baby is clean and everything's perfect, because you don't want to...
And you don't swear when they come round. Yeah.
No, and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, I just want everything to be okay, which is added pressure. But I totally get it. And actually, unless you're willing to go through all of that, then there's no point in adopting. You know, it is a different path to parenthood, and it is parenting, and it is amazing. But it's something that you have to really do your homework on before you do it. It's not like, you know, if anyone goes, oh, we're not going to have, we decided we're not going to have a baby, we're not going to do, we've done IVF, we're going to adopt. It's not as
it's not the easy
that.
Option.
Not that. Yeah. No, it's not. But it's totally, Billy is my absolute joy. I love her so unconditionally, and I am such a tiger for her and her biggest champion. And literally anyone tries to, even John, bless him, you know, if he says something, it's like, nope. You go through,
step away from the Billy.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
One of the things that fascinated me about your parenthood journey was the long-lasting effects you say Clomid had on you. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I think I vaguely remember. I just turned, literally within 3 hours, I think, of taking it, I was a different person.
It's fascinating.
And definitely the next day, I was just... Actually, I feel it now. The hormones, my hormones are obviously up and down now. I'm 49 years old, and I suddenly go, oh my God, this rage that I can't, that it was the same, but it was like four seasons in one day. It was like one minute I was lovely and happy and full of hope, and then the next minute I was crying on the bathroom floor, and then the next minute I was angry and shouting, and then the next minute I was like, come on, we need to have sex. You know, it was just that you just didn't know what you were going to get. So
I think it's important that we talk about it though, because
some women do it for years.
They do.
It's just horrific.
And the reason I think it's important to talk about is I see a lot of people chatting about it in the NetMums forum, obviously trying to conceive, and they're like, oh, just go and get some Clomid, it'll be fine, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, okay, yes, it's great that it's there as this thing to help people try and get pregnant, but anything hormone related comes with a lot of extra baggage, and you need to be prepared for what's going to hit you with, like, a sledgehammer, I think.
I agree. I think as well, we put such pressure on ourselves. You get to a certain age and everyone around you is having babies. And when it's not quite working for you, it suddenly feels like you're on that wheel and you need to do it. And you put so much pressure on yourself, and the Clomid makes you bonkers. Sometimes
it
really heightens everything, but all hormone treatment does. And I think, you know, going through IVF, people think, oh, I'm just going to go have IVF. It's not just IVF. It's really, really a big process. And I think that, you know, as women, we have to be there to support other women. And sometimes that means people are very vocal and go, well, then you can just do this, or let's try that, or have you tried?
People very much want to fix things
for you, don't they?
They do.
And actually what you need is someone just to sit there and listen to whatever the hell is going on.
I think that's my biggest thing I've learned in the last 14 years, is that you can't fix things, that sometimes you just have to sit in the mud with somebody. And I think that that comes with sitting in the mud with your friends if they're trying to conceive, holding their hand and talking about it, but going, okay, so what do you think, or do you think that they're, what do you think you might do next, instead of, okay,
well,
so
you must try this. Yeah.
And I think that's all our, you know, I think as a strong, powerful women, that's our go-to. You go, okay, so let's help. What's next? But sometimes it isn't about saying what's next. It's just about sitting there for a bit and giving yourself time to move to the next level, whatever it is.
I think that's really valuable in terms of parenting your kids as well. Like, we're not going to be great parents if we just try and sort everything out for them. We need to just be there while they do their thing, right?
Hard to do, though, isn't it?
Oh, it's so flipping hard.
It is. It's taken a lot of therapy and homework, I call it, which is such a weird word. But I mean, to go, do you know what? She doesn't need everything fixing. I can't fix it. But what I can do is sit with her. And sometimes she doesn't want me to sit with her, but she knows that I'm sitting there with her. Yeah. And sometimes it's about going, yeah, that must be really hard, instead of, okay, well, what I'm going to do is we're going to do this, and this, because that may not work with your child.
Or as well, parent, or and the tendency is so there, I get it, to say, oh, come on, it's not that bad. Come on, don't cry. It's okay. When actually to them, whatever it is doesn't feel okay, does it?
Yeah, absolutely.
But also putting yourself back and trying to remember what it felt like when you were them and it wasn't okay, rather than putting your adult perception of, oh, but it's okay, it's fine. It's, you know, when you're 14, what matters is very different to when you're 42 or 49. It's like trying to put yourself back into those teenage years where it really does matter if you can't FaceTime your friends because mummy says you can't, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, totally.
Now, another aspect of your parenting journey that I find interesting, and I know is, again, something a lot of net mums users encounter, is you lost your mum when you were quite young, didn't you?
I did,
It's hard to parent without that parent beside you, isn't it?
I think it really brings it home. It's that somebody said the other day, oh, that was a trigger for my husband. And I thought, yeah, that word, it's a really good word. That trigger word, because some things trigger it. And when you first have a child and you don't have a parent, your mum there, especially for me, it was really difficult. And I think it always comes up. My mum died when I was 16. I only had her for 16 years. I'm now 49.
16 is a baby, you realise now, don't you? A complete baby.
And I just think, how strong she was, and what an amazing woman she was, that I still talk about her, feel that her around me, she shapes my life, she defines me. So I think losing your mum, whatever age, is, it's one of those things that we don't get over, especially having children. So I talk about her a lot, even though she hasn't been around for so long, but I still talk about her like she is around. And you know, Billy knows all about her. And yeah, I think that's the only way through it, really. It doesn't ever, somebody said, does it get easier? And it does get easier. Grief, you learn to live with it. But it just changes, doesn't it? And I think that's my comfort, is that I feel that she's probably around me, even though I can't see her. And that's in memories and things I use and energies and all of that. Do you know what I mean? Even I use her cooking utensils and you know, loads of her things are around me, which just makes me feel like she's still around.
Do you think parenting without a mum beside you makes you rely on your friends even more?
Definitely. My mum had a really amazing group of friends who were all my godmothers. And actually, you know, they still come for dinner. And, you know, I've sort of recreated that with my two best friends and my sister. And it really is, without them, I don't know what I would do.
That's amazing. I think one of the untold stories of parenthood is, I know it's this naff cliche, it takes a village, but God, you need your friends alongside you when you're doing it, don't you?
I agree. And even if it's to talk to them about how you're parenting, and you'll realise as you go through it that you parent maybe differently, or you have to parent differently for different reasons to your friends. But it's really nice to get their opinions and their takes on stuff. And also just to be able to blurt it out and not be judged. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just need to go walk and shout and they just don't judge you. They just love you.
Wendy and I were lucky enough to have our first babies hours apart.
Oh my God.
And we are the people that we, sometimes the phone call will go like this. I just need to tell you that this happened. And you go, exactly. blah, 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 and then you go, can I speak to you? Bye.
That's
and the
exactly
other one doesn't
it.
Need to speak.
No.
But also, as my daughter gets older, what I value almost as much from my group of friends in where she's growing up is that sometimes she'll go to them in a way. So as she becomes a teenager, I think sometimes you just don't want to speak to your mum, however close to your mum you are. And I feel like she's got like five other mums who all do things differently, who she can go to and get advice or just slag me off or whatever it is that she wants yeah. to do. I think it's not female friendships. It's like having lots of other mums, I think.
I agree. And actually, it's really funny because we were watching the football last night and my best friend was sitting with my daughter and she said something like the usual, like some sort of snipey comment at me. And and Ange was the first one to go, oh, no, hang on a minute. And she did it in such a way that Billy was then like, yeah, sorry, Mama. And aww. It's funny, isn't it? Their relationships
yeah, the
with
dynamics,
their aunties.
They're all yeah. so valuable. They're all so yeah. valuable. Now, can I just say that you are getting me through this summer with your recipes that are on
the Ocado website.
Yes. All about the fast family recipes, because that is what I need. I want to eat nice things, but I don't want to spend loads of time doing it. So thank you.
Do you know what? I love working with them, with Ocado. It's just been brilliant. And I love making up the recipes because it has to be, for me, stuff that's quick and stuff that's, you know, I don't want to be spending too long doing it. And actually, things, plans change so quickly.
Yes.
I don't know about you, but my kids are like, the teenagers are, one minute they're there, then the next minute they're, oh, sorry, I'm not. I'm going to go out on Friday night.
Yeah. And you're like, they're like, by the way, there's six friends
oh, so-and-so's
coming
back
over tonight.
Yeah. And so I think we just sort of have stuff that's in the freezer or stuff that you can just do very quickly. So I've been doing a lot of that, and we've been doing John and Lisa's Kitchen, and we're about to film. I'm filming some Lorraine recipes over the summer, and then ooh. In September, John and I go back to do 10 episodes of John and Lisa's Kitchen.
Do you like the work you do together more than the work you don't do together?
I love both. I would hate to
politically correct on.
No, because
he's not listening. He's not listening, you can say.
It's in the kitchen. But I would hate to do, I would hate to just work with him. I would feel like I'm not just part. I've been on my journey. I'm an actress, which I love. And when I get an acting job, I absolutely love that. I love cooking on my own and I love my cooking. But I never expected to enjoy working with John like we do. And it's actually a surprise in the fact that we've done a cooking show that is, we forget that we're on telly. We just cook and we have a lovely time.
But you clearly enjoy it.
I was going to say, I think it's the relaxed thing that makes it work.
Yeah.
Because I think you do that, whoever you're with, because when I was doing the corn cook-along stuff with you, I just felt like I was having a glass of wine with my mate watching her cook the kids' tea. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think your style is what a lot of people can relate to.
Well, I think it's just, cooking is fun and I like meeting people. I like cooking along with anybody. Do you know what I mean? It just happens that my husband is a top chef.
Just happens to be.
Yeah, I think people really interest loads. Anyone I meet and anyone I chat to on my Instagram, I just think everyone's got such amazing lives and stories. And, you know, we're all just human trying our best, you know. And I think that's
so
what
true.
I really like about meeting people is that you go, oh, you know what, we're all in this together, really. And that's what came out of lockdown, was that we're all in it together.
One of the questions that we always ask, and I'm really interested to see how you're going to answer this one, is how do you want to be remembered by your daughter and by your stepdaughter?
Stepkids.
Sorry, yeah.
John's actually got two more, but they're much older. They're in their 20s. They're lovely. I know that my stepdaughter would remember me always as a pushover. They call me Pushover Lisa, P-O-L. So that would be
brilliant.
That they would remember because I just let them go and do pretty much what they want. And then my daughter, I hope she... Oh my God, that's hard. I hope she remembers me as love and warmth.
That's really nice.
Yeah, and a hand to hold.
If you had to define your mum, yeah, what would you say about your mum?
Oh, completely the opposite.
Oh, really? Yeah.
No, she was complete. Her showing of love was through food. She was very much, she was so glamorous and didn't, and she, you would know whether she was in a mood with you whether when she walked through the door. Like if she closed the door, the door slammed, I'd know she was in a bad mood. If it was like, hi, she was in a good mood. So I think it was just, it's very funny. I remember her as a whirlwind, my mum, and as love and fun and vibrant. She was just loud and she was very confident and probably not self-assured, but she came across as that. But she wasn't like a mumsy cuddler.
Are you a mumsy cuddler?
I yeah, to the point that my daughter's like, I really don't want to be hugged today. Please get off me.
Okay, well, that's fascinating that you're quite different from your mum. Now, from the kind of the deep to the very, very shallow, to the fact that, yeah, it's more like a puddle. What's for tea tonight and who's cooking?
I'm cooking. I'm making, I'm actually having to test recipes that I'm filming tomorrow.
God, your kids are lucky.
Oh, they don't think they are. Even though that they ask for whatever they ask for, they get. But we're having chicken that is marinated in Thai curry and coconut.
Oh, it sounds so nice.
And a lovely smashed cucumber salad. So that's what I'm doing.
Ooh. And who normally cooks?
Both of us. Depends on who. Like, John will go, do you want me to do it tonight? Or I'll go, please, will you make her something? And he'll make it.
What's his go-to?
What's the best thing that he makes on a
Tuesday
night? That
you say, John, will you please make that?
Oh, he makes the most amazing curries. Oh. So, like, Thai curry. Oh my God, fish
curry.
How
are you not 100 stone? Seriously.
I don't know. Luckily, it's my genes, I think, because the food that he makes is incredible. And, you know, if you ask him to make a steak, it's perfect. It's like, and it's like, just does it. He's amazing. He is amazing. Whereas I'll make pasta or a roast dinner.
Both of those things are fine as well, I hasten to add. Right, last question, Wendy. You can ask it this time.
Lisa Faulkner. Please, will you imagine? Now, you have to cast your mind back to when Billy was younger. Please, would you imagine that you're tucking her into bed and sing us your lullaby?
Oh, you're not going to make me do
we
that.
We know that every family has a song that they sing when their little one can't sleep. And we're not just asking it of you. We ask it of every guest on every episode. Everyone has to do it.
And you'll be amazed who's refused.
We've only had two refusals, haven't we?
And they were both singers.
Interestingly, they were both chart-topping singers.
That's hilarious. The song that I have to sing her is Ali Bali, Ali Bali Bee, sitting on your mummy's knee, waiting for a wee bobby to buy some Coulter's candy.
I have never heard that song.
It's like
neither
a really
have
old
I.
song. And I sit and I go, do you want Ali Bali? And she goes, yeah. So I'd have to sing that while
even at 14. Where's that song from? I've never heard it.
It was some song I learnt at school, and I just did it once to my nieces when they were babies, and
and it stuck.
You can imagine that she is treated to like an amazing singer, because I really am not.
You're better than us.
Yeah, that was tuneful. Ours isn't.
But the really depressing thing is my youngest at the moment. Do you remember the song Cauliflowers Fluffy?
Yeah,
no.
The harvest.
Yeah.
She's heard this song. I'm not singing it, but she's heard this song somewhere. So every night at the moment,
Cauliflowers Fluffy and Cabbage is Green.
Love strawberries sweeter than any I've seen. And she demands this, and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Oh, it's so
she's going to be scarred for life.
It's so cute. I have midnight chats now instead of lullabies. I have a counselling session before we go to sleep. But
I think everyone needs a counselling session before they go to sleep. It's a great habit to get into.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Oh, Lisa, thank you so much for being with us today and for being so open and like full of insight into a different kind of parenting journey. I think you're the first adoptive parent we've had on, so I think that's fascinating.
Well, thank you for having me. It was lovely to talk to you.